Welcome to the Supply Chain Talks podcast. My name is Sophie van den Enk, and in this season, the second season, I will dive into the world of sustainable container supply chains. As decision makers, cargo owners, and freight forwarders play a key role in boosting sustainability in the logistics chain. But how do you build a CO2 neutral and at the same time resilient supply chain? And what are the possibilities and standout examples that exist today? Reduce, replace, rethink is a concept that can be used as a strategy to decarbonize your supply chain. Each episode, I will dive into one of these three concepts with container industry experts. And this episode, we're talking with cargo owner Rico about rethink. So Rico is a leading document management solutions provider, and I want to know more about that in just a second, and is committed to sustainability. We'll discuss their innovative approach to reporting and rethinking their supply chain. Joining me today are Martijn Spee and Martin Swinnerton from Rico's facility in the Netherlands, Berg op Zoom, that covers 50,000.
Eight soccer fields.
Eight soccer fields of square meters and handles 12,000 orders daily. You already heard Martijn a little bit, so that's a huge space. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about what it is that Rico does?
Yeah, my name is Martijn Spee, as you mentioned. I work for Rico for 15 years. I'm a transport manager, so I'm responsible for the distribution in Europe. And in Bergen op Zoom, we have our European distribution center. And from that facility, we are delivering across Europe. And what we do is we are a manufacturer from region, but we're turning more into a service provider, IT service provider.
You're a leading document management solutions provider. Now, what is that?
Yeah, I think our original products is the copier machine, but now everybody's using a copier machine in a different way. So It's really, we are selling document solutions by digitalizing your documents feature, your, let's say, invoicing process, and the machines are still helping in that process by, for example, scanning papers into a digital environment.
Okay. So a copier machine, we can understand, and we can also understand that the world is evolving and that the copier machine takes a different shape and form these days. Martin, it's a bit confusing. We have Martijn and Martin. Yeah. It's good to have you here too. What, you also have been with Rico for 15 years.
Correct, yeah. So I'm Martin Swinnerton. I work as a business excellence manager for Rico Supply Chain. originally from the UK, and I came over here, and what I do over there is I look after the compliance and a sort of risk management area of Rico, but also we have quite a lot of projects running, so manage the project office for supply chain. And one of my, favorite topics is actually sustainability. So I run the program for supply chain, and that's where I'm a sort of partner in crime with Martijn. Where we've been working for many years already on reducing carbon emissions and sort of, like you say, rethinking the way we do logistics.
Yeah. So, and why is that one of your favorite topics? What's so fun?
Well, because it's an important topic. So, especially in the world we live in, it's a good way to contribute as a company to sort of making the world a better place. we've been quite successful. So Rico, from its origin, as our founder, the founding principles, he came up with our founder, Kiyoshi Ishimura, in 1936 already defined the principle of love your neighbor, love your country, love your work. And that very much lines up with the modern philosophy of CSR, which is people, planet, and profit.
Yeah.
So, it's an important topic for Rico, and it's something that we're given a lot of space to work on in supply chain. It's a strategic theme as well for Rico.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, it's very interesting how those things all sort of go hand in hand. That's exactly what we're trying to sort of discuss and discover in this podcast. Like, how does that work? Because you guys can really help other companies get inspiration from your experience, especially since you've been at this for so long, and it's very much at the core, the DNA of Rico. What what drives this commitment? Is it really that DNA, or is it the changes in the world that you see today? Is it the opportunities, the business opportunities that lie within them? Martin wants to take this one.
Well,
Martin.
I think we have the strategy already for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I believe that we were a little bit were ahead. So it's in our strategy already since at least 2015. I think our CEO spoke in Paris in 2015 on the climate conference. Mm-hmm. But we see now that it's getting more important from different angles. So the customers are requiring it more. We want to, actually the supply chain is 90% of our total footprint. So it's really important to take the role. Mm. And next to that, there will become more and more governmental rules about it. So
because if you look at it from this risk perspective, it's also kind of a risk not to take this perspective into account.
I mean, when I joined Ricoh, I was really surprised to see it was a corporate organization. It had an environmental division, so they had, let's say, all over the world, people working on sustainable product design and processes, sustainable logistics. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of again, it's come from our DNA. Mm-hmm. What Ricoh also does a lot of is we focus on circularity. So obviously we want to sell new machines to customers. What happens when the machine is end of life? We need to think about how to reuse that. So we have a lot of processes designed already for many, many years, thinking about how to reuse parts, how to refill, for example, toner cartridges, mm-hmm. and even remanufacture machines to use them at other customers. We call that the Comet Circle concept. Yeah.
And to do that in a way that is still very viable for business, is very, it's an interesting. Martijn, your focus lies in the transportation division. Obviously, we're in the port of Rotterdam, so we need to talk transport too. Could you walk us through the journey of one of your products from manufacturing to final delivery?
Yeah, we are global. We're shipping on a global level. So our manufacturing is based in Asia. So in Japan, China, and Thailand, there are our main factories. We ship them for the European region. We ship them all to Rotterdam. We're talking about 5,000 containers a year. They're going by big vessels. We ship them to Rotterdam, and we collect 95% of the port of Rotterdam with barges to Bergen-op-Zoom. Barge is an inland vessel.
Yeah.
And from there, we store it in the Bergen-op-Zoom facility, and from there we ship in it all across Europe. So by parcel, a truck, by container, by rail. A lot of if you go to Italy, for example, and Spain, and from there we deliver it to dealers or to customers. So we have a big network of a lot of modalities, a lot of shipments.
Yeah.
And in the end, we also need to collect the machines again at the customers.
I was just going to say, because we talk about the circularity, mm-hmm. you're now talking about new product coming
Correct.
In,
yeah.
but you mm-hmm. also receive products that have been used and that you want to...
We take back, all of our machines, once they end of contract, we bring them back, and then we think about how to reuse. Some machines we can't reuse because they may be just too old, so we will... let's say recycle them.
Mm-hmm.
we have some machines that we have a wonderful site in Colmar in the Alsace in mm-hmm. France,
which is a nice place anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, but they have a remanufacturing process where we take thousands of devices and remanufacture them into a product called Greenline.
What is that?
It's a fully remanufactured Ricoh printer. Which is as new, mm-hmm. But we try to reuse as many of the original parts as we can. So some of the key components are replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, we wipe the data, so disks are cleaned and so on. But we can resell that as a new machine.
Wow, yeah.
So a different sort of marketing concept. This is part of our portfolio. So if we have requests from, say, governmental organization or different company for sustainable device, then we can offer this as a product which is more sustainable from its nature.
Yeah. And if you look at that from a transportation point of view, then that's different because you can't really operate in bulk as much as you can with your regular virgin.
Yeah, that's correct. So what we do, we also have local warehouses in Europe. And that enable us to ship in bulk to these warehouses. So that, but that's one way. So and therefore, we use a lot of sustainable solutions like rail transportation. But in the end, we also need to think of how to get the machines back. And we, for example, if we collect machines from the countries back to the Colmar factory, we're using double-deck trailers. So it can be two or three stacked in one trailer. So instead of using one or two trucks, you do only one. So we're thinking of how to do that. And that's we do that more in the last years. We even have also a program manager for this, who was one of our colleagues, really focusing on that. And that really helps.
Yeah, because how do you make transportation more sustainable? What specific actions are involved? Is that the mode of transportation mostly you think about?
Yeah, but it can also be more efficient. So increase your loading efficiency. That's very important. Make sure that you cooperate with your partners, that you reduce the empty kilometers, not only for yourself, but also for them. Modality is very important for us. So don't ship, reduce your number of air shipments to, for example, to ocean, reduce the number of road transportation to rail shipments, reduce your service level, for example, for parcels from express to standard service, which means that it don't fly, but it goes by road. All those kind of things are very important to do.
And how difficult is it to rethink a process when a company has been around for a while? Then you carry your certain DNA, which can be a good thing, but you're also trying to reshape things that have sort of turned into a certain way. And this
Correct.
Is how we do
Correct.
It.
Correct. Yeah, you rethink, you need to rethink your routings, your gravity, where your locations are. You need to rethink your service level. So you need to engage with your customers, so saying, okay, the world is changing. So we need to rethink, we cannot ship everything on the highest service level, on the fastest way. We need to change that because the world is changing. We need to take responsibility with all of us.
But you mentioned that customers are also interested in this. Are they willing to engage with you and to proactively think about it?
We're starting to have that conversation now. So it's, do you need to have it tomorrow? Or can we plan better and maybe deliver it in 3 days? So we don't need to air freight, for example, a toner through a parcel network. We can use maybe the regular truck delivery. And as those trucks become more and more maybe electrified, then it becomes almost the possibility to deliver carbon neutral. Mm-hmm. So customers are definitely interested. Also, the way it arrives at customers. So we always get questions and remarks about packaging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've all experienced receiving, when we order parcels online, where you trying to find the thing you've ordered and it's airbags and whatnot.
Really big box.
So that's something we've worked really hard on to eliminate those type of things from our delivery processes. And that's also initially we had, let's say, customers commenting, can you do this better and in a different way?
Something that always really strikes me when you talk about sustainability and all the gains that you can make is how much collaboration is involved, or how much value that actually brings to really think together about how can we make this better? How can we, because there might be blind spots for you as a provider that your customer can actually communicate to you, and you're like, oh, this is great. We can actually save and be more efficient.
What I said, it's important to connect with your partners. So you need to make a strategy, you need to make a roadmap, do it together with your partners and have the same strategy.
Yeah. So how do you organize that within Rico, Martin?
Like I mentioned earlier, it is a strategic topic, so that really helps. So if the board is asking, then you're likely to get things done in the area.
We need to get the board to ask it.
So, and we have sustainability is a global strategy of Rico. It's a European business strategy and it's a supply chain strategy. So there's a big cascade of, so we develop plans. We've been developing plans already for, more than 10 years in this area. We have different, focus areas, for example, carbon reduction and logistics. We also have an area around reuse of products.
Right. Yeah. And in order to take those steps forward, I imagine it's crucial to have insight into where we touched on this a little bit already. Like, where can you optimize? How do you measure your carbon emissions? Why is that measurement so vital?
You really need to get insight first before you can actually improve. So you need to know in what areas your footprint is higher compared to the other ones. So we do that on a yearly basis. We started it in 2020, but we also use the software to recalculate the data as from 2015, because we still had the data.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that we reduced 23% since 2015 compared to 2020. So that's really great, because in these years we did a lot of things. I think we put 20% of our cargo on rail transportation compared to 2015. So it's really good to see the result of your effort. And we also been rewarded by the Lean and Green Star, the first one. So that's also in line with our strategy to really keep reducing.
To get awards.
Yeah. We are really now targeting on 4% reduction per year.
Yeah.
And not only because, for example, the trucks are getting better. Mm-hmm. So the emission per truck is getting lower, but also what we are really want to do this 4% with our own decisions. So making the model shift, being more efficient. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things.
Yeah, and I imagine the first years of improving 4% are sort of relatively easier, because then you can handle the low-hanging fruit. But now you're
that's true.
What's the opposite of low-hanging fruit?
You can't move everything to rail. That's what we started with, into like modal shift to railways. But then how do you, then there's a little bit of a point on the horizon where technology needs to be maybe more the answer.
Yes. So
more green transport modes, electrification, hydrogen power, those kind of things. And that's where we really need to collaborate with our carriers. They need to come with solutions and ideas where we can have a go.
How about ocean freight? Because you mentioned, of course, that you can't move everything to rail. If you have a production in Asia, you're going to want to also have ocean freight. So what initiatives is RICO undertaking to embrace?
You still really rely on the ocean freight. That's the only possibility. So what we do, we also invest in biofuel. So a portion of our containers are being, it's offsetting of insetting these this cargo. So we saw with certificates that we indeed have a lower footprint with the same vessels.
Mm-hmm.
We really have strategies to keep the air freight as minimal as possible. Only do it by exception if we really have problems, and you see that also declining year by year. And on the other side, it's also very important that that's the role of the Port of Rotterdam that. You will really have an efficient handling of the containers.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when you have 70% of your containers by barge to the inland terminal, you can really increase that by having an efficient port. And that's also where we are successful, and we are keep increasing the number. So we're really aiming to have at least 95% of the containers by barge into the inland terminal.
Yeah, because if you're looking to improve each year that 4%, obviously you're looking at your transportation over the ocean. But once you arrive in the port, that's where you can also save. What roles? What more possibilities are there?
I think it's important that you also need to rely on the innovation and the technique behind it. You see that the vessels are already new vessels are being built with more sustainable vessels. I think one is also doing that now. But also Port of Rotterdam needs to invest in infrastructure. So I hope that in the next coming years we can, for example, use electric trucks to collect the containers. So if we need to collect it by truck, we can use those kind of vehicles. But on the other hand, they need to be charged somewhere. So that's also important that Port of Rotterdam is facilitating those kind of innovations.
And are they?
They are. Yeah. I know that. So I know that they are investing in electric charging stations. But also the infrastructure for the rail connections from Maasvlakte is very important to get containers into the mainland, to even to Germany by rail. So that is important. And also that you're in hospitality, gastvrij.
Hospitality
for the barges. So that barges want to come to your port to collect the containers. So,
yes. You receive all your shipments from Asia into Europe via Rotterdam.
Yeah.
Why is that choice? Why is it Rotterdam for you?
It's the number one port. Basically, it's Europe's biggest port. We decided to put the logistics center of in Bergen-op-Zoom due to that fact that Rotterdam is the gateway to Europe.
It's always nice to hear a non-Dutch person say this. Thank you.
So from that perspective, it really makes sense. But also, the connections between Rotterdam and Asia are, also the best in Europe.
They're the first port, so the vessels coming directly from Asia into Rotterdam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have factories in Thailand, China, Japan, so we need those connections directly, and that's what Rotterdam offers. And it's only, then an hour and a half max to Bergen-op-Zoom to the central point where we can distribute across Europe.
To be honest, we're as close as Antwerp as Rotterdam.
Yeah.
So why are we choosing Rotterdam? So it's also mainly because of all the IT infrastructure behind it, like port base. The connection with the customs is very easy, and there is more capacity to collect from Rotterdam by barge. So what we mentioned, this is the first port for the vessel, but also for the outbound logistics.
Yeah.
It's also the last port. So for example, if you ship to Africa, you always have the shortest lead time for Rotterdam because this is the last port before it sails to that region.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're really looking for a place that that does not impose any extra effort. Like, you want everything to be smooth. So the good data infrastructure,
correct,
good transmission to barges, that all those things help drive this decision and continues to make you want to choose Rotterdam.
Yeah, our terminal, inland terminal partner, they are doing the most work for us. We just sail to them, okay, these are our containers in and outbound, and they arrange it for us. And they can do that because they have the interface with the system. So they have fixed calls, so it's really easy to get the containers to Rotterdam.
Yeah, so there's certain time slots just always available through them. Yeah. Yes, okay, I get it. And how what percentage of emissions do you reduce through this intermodal transportation?
20% in the first 5 years, basically. So we did a 20%.
That's huge.
There is a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between basically rail and road.
Well, and of course, that's part of your job, Martin, to predict sort of this demand and ensuring this on-time delivery to customers. And that's a very complex task because every customer is different and you want to deliver good service to every individual one. What are the challenges in this area? What are people willing to put up with for the environment? Or what do you see as the challenges there?
We've designed a business which is like used to delivering next day service, and
people got really spoiled.
Yeah, people get really spoiled, and it's like when we order packets at home as well, we get them tomorrow. So it's a challenge, and I think with better predictive planning, we for example on our devices we can now predict remotely when a toner is going to run out. So instead of predicting that one day before, maybe we set the settings to 3 or 4 days, then we have more time to deliver a toner bottle.
And based on that information, do you also make modality shifts?
So that would mean that our parcel carriers would not necessarily need to air freight it. So they have big air freight networks, but they could maybe move it through their road transport network or even with bike couriers. So that kind of technology visibility is really helping to change the way we do things.
For example, we're now also rethinking our network to Poland. Carriers are also improving. So in Warsaw, for example, you'll be there in 2 days compared to 3-4 days a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So you are able to make that shift. In for example, delivering to 2 days is also acceptable at this moment compared to the 1 day by air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that last mile solution, of course, really demands something completely different. I'm sort of first imagining these huge bulk ships coming in, and then it becomes smaller and smaller and more close-knit solutions. What are the challenges there?
But the challenge is to get it to the local networks.
Yeah.
That's the most challenging one. So if you are a European shipper like us, you cannot have a warehouse in every country, because you need to have a central supply chain, you have that central warehouse. So make sure that you use local hubs. And as said, it's really easy to ship sustainable from that local hub.
Yeah.
But the challenge is to get it there.
Yeah. And so, then to figure out where that hub should be, that probably.
Yeah, you can do gravity studies. So you need to know where your customers are. You need to know the volumes. Mm-hmm. You need to have tools for that to see that, from where do we need to put local hubs.
Yeah, exactly.
Or for example, a partner has already a hub somewhere because his customers are always there, and you can connect to those kind of hubs.
Yeah. Rico, of course, has a lot of experience already rethinking, or maybe in your case, it's not necessarily even rethinking because you started out thinking this way. So with all that experience, maybe you can elaborate a little bit on some advice you might be able to give to cargo owners that are really facing these same challenges, but also the same desire to want to make things more sustainable.
I think it is a little bit about change management, and you know, the desire comes from, first of all, getting it on the agenda. So you know, the advice to any company would be, make it strategic topic, make sure the board owns the topic.
Yes.
Then develop plans, and then you can cascade that through by measuring the way, you know, your carbon emissions are, or you know, your performance in the different areas, and then identify the initiatives that you need to actually, you know, make it happen. So the cascade is important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we all learned a lot in the last years. So supply chain was always very stable, and then COVID kicks in. So I think the whole the shippers, and that's something everybody needs to do, is to make sure that you're agile and are able to adapt to changes. We also have the crisis now in the Red Sea. So we are now able to, let's say, better able to cope with those changes.
Mm-hmm. Because those changes or influences will always be there. I mean, it's not exceptional anymore.
It was, and now it's not anymore. Yeah. So you need to make sure that your processes are able to adapt to those kind of disruptions.
Yes.
And that's
very
important.
Yeah, because the disruption is sort of the stable factor at this
point. Yeah, it's a stable factor. And a couple of years ago, we were really panicking in these kind of situations.
Yeah.
We still sometimes do a little bit, but we are
it's
more
good to
mature
be a little
now
bit
to,
panicky.
Yeah,
like,
you need to be panicked, because otherwise you don't find the right
stay
solution.
Stay awake.
But yeah, you stay awake. That's a good thing. So we developed a lot of our supply chain in the last years.
Yeah, panicked and resilient. Something that I also really took from your story is that to really attach a number to it, so 4% every year. That really is a driver for being staying curious about, okay, how can we still improve now? We've done all this, but you don't become complacent about
it. Like
it.
We said, we took the low hanging fruit, and now we need to be really creative to find the next 4% and the next 4%.
Exactly.
And that means, you know, really going to our partners and saying, okay, we need your help. How do we do this? You know, we can't do it from our distribution center sitting in Bergen op Zoom. We need to go out to our partners and make it happen.
You really need to act now, otherwise you are too late. Because if the regulation will come and you're not there ready, then you have a problem.
Yeah, you want to be in front of that. Well, thank you, Martijn and Martin, both of you, for these, shedding a light on how you are rethinking or maybe thinking about your supply chain practices. It's very inspiring to hear your enthusiasm and excitement about the topic. It really comes from within. In the next episode of Supply Chain Talks, I will be joined by Portbase. We already heard its name in this episode, and APM Terminals.
For example, last week we discharged the Manila Maersk with 10,151 moves. Then it's really important that those containers get to flow out of the terminal in a seamless way.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to know where do the containers go, where can we position them right in the yard to avoid congestion. And that information is what we get via port base.
If you want to know more, check out portofrotterdam.com/containershipping. Thank you so much for joining me again, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And thanks to all our listeners. I hope you will tune in again to the Supply Chain Talks podcast. Thank you.